I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Tom Dillon. He is the founder of Frack Finance. He's a fractional CFO who helps growth stage companies scale smartly. And his mission is to demystify complex financial concepts so he can empower entrepreneurs, business owners, and business leaders. He wants executives to make more confident, informed decisions to fuel long-term success. And we're going to talk about a number of things, but, you know, I was talking to a business owner yesterday, and we went through some quick math, and we realized he was losing money on his business, and that's why you need, he was losing money on a particular thing he was selling, and that's why you need people like Tom in your life. So listen up, I think Tom's going to bring the heat. Tom, welcome.
Happy to be here, Craig. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. You know, on that thing, I mean, I was talking to somebody and they mentioned their business and they were doing something and they were a subcontractor of a larger firm. I'm not going to give too many details. So, you know, don't want folks connecting the dots necessarily, but he told me what he was getting paid to do this one service. I'm thinking, wow, that sounds cheap. And so I started asking him, I was like, when this happens, tell me what your employees are doing. And he kind of mapped it out. And the whole process was like 30 minutes for his employees to deliver this service. He was getting paid $12.50 for that service. And I asked him, I was like, how much do you pay your employees? And he's like, oh, $20 to $26 an hour. I'm like, I think you're losing money.
Yeah, the unit economics do not check out on that one. That's a quick, easy one.
Well, and what's interesting was he went through all sorts of reasons why that was an important part of his business. None of them made sense to me, but I'm sure you run into this all the time when you're dealing with clients. I mean, what do you see? What are some examples of things that you've seen where you go in and you see somebody's business and you're like, dude, what you're doing here is not helping you. It's hurting you.
Yeah. The interesting part is a lot of times these business owners don't even know. They might have someone that is handling the product. And in order to win a bid, you know, they've lowered their price below a profitable margin. And so just doing a quick scan of kind of product margin and what the contribution margin per service or product or whatever they might be offering, depending on the business, you're going to quickly see that there's a lot of businesses out there that are, they might think it's a loss leader, but when you really get down to brass tacks, it's not. They're just losing money because they wanted to win the bid. And for whatever reason, I don't think they've ever run through the actual unit economics of that client or that product or that service line. And you'd be amazed at how many companies are operating at a loss on a lot of their services or products.
Well, and it can be confusing. You know, I remember once asking my bookkeeper, how much does it cost for me to hire an employee? You know, when I bring somebody in, what's my cost? And I never got an answer. Now, I probably was asking the wrong person. I was asking a bookkeeper, not a fractional CFO. But I have a feeling that a lot of business owners don't know that answer.
I think there's a lot of business owners that need help probably with resource allocation or resource management, meaning, you know, when to hire, where to, you know, double down in certain traction channels for their marketing spend. A lot of them don't even know the KPIs or what their best channel is. And so I think ultimately, they don't have time. A lot of the business owners, they're focused in on the thing that got them to where they are today. And a way that a lot of business owners get there is through gut and grit. And so at some point, you're no longer in this void, this vacuum of no data, making decisions, growing, building the business. You start to find yourself sitting in a lot of data, but it's not what got you there. And the problem is, I think a lot of business owners don't realize that to get to that next stage, they're going to have to start relying on it because it's what's going to get them there to that next phase.
Yeah. What puts them in that position? I mean, so you say a lot of people they get started, they have an idea, they get going with grit, but then they linger in that place. I mean, they get that first sale, then they get the second sale, and then they start having some sales. And a lot of them, I think there's a little bit of a chicken and egg. At least, as I think about a few people I talk to, they're like, well, I can't afford to hire some more horsepower to help me figure this out. I need to make more money first.
Yep. I hear that all the time. And I think what it comes down to is there's not enough decision making with real data to make a confident decision. Now, there is some gut and there is some grit when you J curve a business. You start investing in it and you're hoping that you get the return. You start losing money and then you're starting to come back up and you really, are hitting that inflection point, which is a wonderful feeling. The problem is a lot of people don't know confidently, should I be making this decision? And ultimately, it really revolves around a lot of the data and predictability around it. So again, so think about it from this standpoint. We like to try to tell, people to always think about your revenue drivers and really look at the marketing funnel and your sales process and see if there's any predictability there. And looking around what those KPIs tell you and saying, can we, if we spend this money and do one of the hardest things in business, which is hire ahead of growth, scary. But if you're able to do it with some level of confidence, hey, we don't know for certain if we're going to get the same level of interest. But if we look at this and we don't have the money, so what could we do? Well, you could raise some capital, you could inject some of your own cash into the business to hit that next growth phase, or maybe you get a line of credit. Now, I tend to want to stay away from debt unless there's a lot of predictability around the performance of that business. And that really starts at the top line around revenue. We know the costs, they're pretty predictable, but top line is pretty scary. And so if we don't have a good grasp on what those are going to be and look at the data and the predictability around that in the future, it's impossible to make that decision confidently.
So help me with this predictability thing. I mean, in concept, okay, it makes great sense, but I'm looking at these numbers and I'm lost. How do I know what's predictable? How do I know what's not predictable?
It's a good question. So, I mean, everything, like everything, there's usually a range, but there's going to be a fair average within that range, and there's seasonal components and everything. But the way that we think about it, and maybe this could be useful to some of the audience from a tactical standpoint, we'll really look at what KPI. So think of, let's use an example. I'll give a story and then an insight. So think about an e-commerce business, boutique women's fashion company. So we have a lot of different traction channels that you go down. Email marketing, SMS, Google Ads, Meta. Let's just pick Meta. So when you pick one of these traction channels, Facebook or Instagram, there's a level of predictability around what that KPI on that marketing traction channel is going to be. I spend X, I get Y. Industry average for e-commerce, they typically will say it's around 4 ROAS, meaning, acronyms are terrible for anyone. So we'll break that down. That's a return on ad spend.
Yeah.
And so if I put an ad out to the world on Meta, I'm expecting to get a 4 return on that investment. which is a pretty good investment. Now, there's a lot of other costs associated with the product, the people servicing it, how it gets from A to B. But overall, that's what you should be looking to in terms of benchmarking against an industry. And so when I think about that, that's the predictability is what is ours? We're at a 3.78. Okay, what's the range been? 2.5 to 5.5. And then our average is that, it's called the 3.7. All right, so we're not far off. We're improving. We've seen the trend line. We're improving. We're starting to really hit our audience, that avatar that everyone's trying to figure out, like, who should I be sending these to? And you're hoping that, Zuckerberg really has the right algorithm to help you get there. And so that's what I mean by predictability. So you take one traction channel, you say, this is my return on that spend. In order to get there, we need to hire this person that's going to handle this channel, or we're going to, or handle, I don't know, whatever it might be. We need to hire another person for merchandising. And in order to get to this next level, or we need to hire someone for fulfillment. And in order to get to this next level, we need to hire someone and spend the marketing. That's scary. So I like to look at the predictability around that and say, all right, do we have any, for one, do we have any predictability from our past data? And can we confidently, or at least somewhat confidently, say we think we're going to get that same return? And you just have to track it, and you have to, kill things that aren't working and fast, especially in the SMB world where, cash is very sacred.
So I'm a marketer, and I had a client come to me once, and they said, "Hey, what management's asking us what the budget for this item should be." And I said, "Well, for every dollar you spend in ads, you get $2 in revenue." And it was super high margin. It was for a newsletter. It was for an electronic newsletter. So to add one more person cost almost nothing. It was just the basic management cost. And so I just asked him, I said, "How much revenue do you want? How much profit do you want?" They're like, "We need a budget." I'm like, "That's the wrong question." It's like, for every dollar you spend on ads, you get $2 in revenue. Now it's not that 4x ROAS, but nevertheless, it was positive. I mean, it was like, we can dial up the budget and you can get more profit. We can dial down the budget and get less profit. What do you want? Can you t We need to tell the boss what our budget should be. And it was so frustrating.
That's too funny. Most businesses don't have a budget, and most businesses don't have a forecast. I like 80% of the ones that I've run into, and it's probably higher, it's more like 90, don't. And so that it's so frustrating and it's so difficult, but then you realize, all right, this is why we're here. We're the ones that are going to be a lot of times, like people think about the finance accounting people. What they're really delivering is accountability.
No, and it's important. I mean, I'm not a fan of controllers because of I'll tell you a story. I mean, I'll tell you.
That. Yeah, lay it on me.
So I was at a company and I had a capital acquisition to do. And it was about $250,000 of capital equipment that I had to buy. And I reached out to I was talking to the supplier and we were going back and forth. And I said, "Hey, look, how about this? I give you my shopping list and I give you a price target. If you hit that target, we're good. That's it. And I don't care if you send us new equipment or, refurb, because they all came with a warranty. If you have a refurb, I really don't care." And so I gave them my shopping list and they came back and pretty much everything on the list was new and it was 20% below list. And I went and told the CFO who came from a controller background and she's like, "Go ask for more." I'm like, "I'm not doing that. I just got a 20% discount." And we were a small company. We were a startup. We were a startup. And so I was like, "It's a miracle they did anything for us at all." I would have been happy with 5 or 10%. They gave us 20%. And it's this mindset I see in controllers that whatever you spent, it's too much.
Yep. Yeah. Normally, it's interesting because a lot of times CFOs get a bad rap that they're cost cutters. Come in, they're cutting jobs. And a lot of times, yeah, you're right. The controllers are doing that. But I'd also think it's a mindset. Someone that has a scarcity mindset versus an abundance mindset.
Yeah.
And so we only hire people that have an abundance mindset. We're growth CFOs. We only focus in on people that want to grow. And sure, you can come in and plug the buckets, or you could come back and say, Craig, we need to ask for more. We're not looking to build relationships here. We want to just really put the bolts to them and get the most out of them. But to me, that's just not the right way to go about it.
Yeah. 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 And I didn't go back and ask for more, but I just couldn't believe it. The thing I've noticed, so I've dealt with a number of CFOs, and the difference I see is those that came up through the ranks as a controller have that scarcity mindset. Those who come from the investment side have that abundance mindset. You tell them, and it kind of comes back to, Jack Welch, when Jack Welch would talk about budgeting. He said, it's all screwed up. The way, annual budgets are set up, it's totally screwed up. He said, I'll give you as much money as you want. You just tell me what I get for it. If I like what I get for that money, you can have it. Now I'm going to hold you accountable. That's where the accountability comes in.
That's right. I love the way that guy does his business. My old boss, when I worked at William Blair, the investment banking firm here in Chicago, he flew him out, Brandon Dobell. He flew him out to his place in Florida. They sat down on his yacht. Mrs. brought out some gelato, and they had a conversation on the boat. And they were in and out, and it was very efficient. Lovely guy. He said, got exactly what they both wanted. And it was just, hey, I want to make sure that everything checks out, and I want to do business with someone who's smart. I want to make sure that we are, aligned in terms of our value system. And as long as those things were aligned, that's all that he cared about, because he knew he was going to be working with someone that had integrity, that had, the value system in place that ultimately was going to lead to the outcome he wanted. Mm-hmm. And so that resonates with everything that you just said. And I always found that fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's go back to predictability. And there's something that I run into, not as much because I prep my clients for it, but where I do get worried is when the numbers guys show up and if they're getting a little too intrusive. So one of the things that we do is we'll run branding ads. Now we work with high ticket service businesses, so we don't run a branding ad to God and everybody. We don't advertise like Nike or Apple, something like that. We have a very, very targeted audience that only that ad goes to. And they're really, really critical because they create the emotional bond. So a lot of marketing is transactional. Hey, here's my offer. Do you want it? And what we found is, at least in my experience, you not only do you sell more, but you sell more at higher margins when you can come in and create an emotional bond in there. And that's why we run the branding ads. But those things are like real buggers to track. We can track about 50% of what our branding ads do. It's kind of like trying to measure the wind. You can't see it, but it's there when you see the trees flapping. And so from a numbers perspective, how do you manage that? If I was working with one of your clients and you're looking over these numbers and you're like, what's Craig doing spending all this money on branding? How would you process that?
It's a great question. And brand advertising isn't necessarily something that you're going to have an immediate predictability around. It's something that's an investment, not the transaction. And so you can kind of think about it, am I making a trade, money for, or expenses for revenue? And think of it like a day trader. They're in and out, and it's a transaction. And then there's people who are saying, hey, this is a long-term hold. I'm going to make this investment. We don't know if it's going to be up or down near term, but long term, over the next 10 years, we know this is great. This is going to be phenomenal. There's the trends in the market. We're aligned there and we're already seeing. So what I do with those aspects, because it is very difficult, and this resonates both with the early onset founders doing startups, as well as the established companies that are has a new competitor in town. I like to try to look at some of the micro traction metrics around, you know, well, who's coming in and is there an ability to track and say, how'd you hear about us? And so some of those aspects around the branding investments can be helpful to know that you're at least, you know, it's not a North Star KPI type situation, a key performance indicator, but you're at least able to put your finger, you know, into the wind and get a barometer on, are we blowing in the right direction? Yeah. And so I think for us, you're right. It, you know, brand advertising and building that brand, it's extremely important. It's very difficult to track in the near term. Long term, yes. And a lot of times those budgets get cut when they shouldn't. And that's part of that scarcity mindset. A lot of times you see marketing budgets get cut and they shouldn't. That's the time probably to double down because your competitors are, and you can start to win the trust and earn the respect of the customers or clients that you're trying to win and build those relationships with.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as an example, we had an account where we started running lead gen ads. And then as soon as we started running branding ads to what we call a retargeting audience for that, the number of sales calls doubled.
I believe it.
And that's what I mean. I can't see the wind, but I can see the trees blowing. And when we, you know, when we refresh the branding ads, we all of a sudden we just see these, you know, this little spike in activity. And yeah, well, that's cool. I appreciate that perspective on that. And I'm going to shift here real quick. This is just something I was really curious about when I was looking up you. So you live in Chicago. Your name is Dylan. That's Irish, right?
Correct.
And you lived in Ireland.
I did. I'm surprised you know that.
Yeah. So you were doing an internship, but not like Dublin. You were over on the Atlantic.
Yes, I was in, it was Creganna Medical Devices, actually. I was through a connection here in Chicago of someone who had a very interesting guy who lived in Ireland growing up, came here to go to Harvard and didn't like it, dropped out, moved to Chicago, went to DePaul. And so we've been family friends for a long time, a little bit given the name and all that, but they were from Creganna or Galway, sorry, and ultimately was looking to get some exposure into the world of finance. He was good friends with the CFO over at that medical device company and was able to help me out and get an internship. And it was just a wonderful experience.
Wow. It looks like, I mean, I looked at, look it up, looked like a big fishing area.
So they've got some, the big things for me there was, you know, you got some horse racing. Industry-wise, it's a huge medical. They've got a whole medical campus of a bunch of different companies that are over there. They've got a ton of facilities in the medical device arena in Galway there. And then it's a huge college, a lot of young, you know, vibrant town. They have a downtown part in, you know, that is constantly kind of booming. I think there was a bar called Lion's Head or something of that effect, which was a ton of fun to go to. They've got this huge old organ that used to be part of a church. And so they just have bands come in and rock out live music. And it's a ton of fun. It's a really wonderful place. When I was there, I was fortunate enough to be there when the Volvo Ocean Races were coming to Galway for the first time. And they had the beaches lined up of 1,000 bonfires to welcome them in. And wow. As they were coming in, they were delayed with the storm. So it was at night. And so they were coming into all of these bonfires on the beach, which was an incredible sight. We stayed up till like 5 in the morning, whatever time it was, late, to watch them come in. Yeah, it was really incredible. And then they had such a warm welcoming in Galway that they ended up having the finish, because there are different points in the race, the finish be there years after, because they had such a great time. So yeah, it was a beautiful place, beautiful people.
Yeah, and for those that don't know, the Volvo is a around the world race. These are sailors that sailed basically from port to port. Yeah, that must have been fascinating. Well, very cool. Yeah, I was just really intrigued in, by that. I wanted to ask about that. Well, we got to wrap up, but tell me, what recommendation would you make to businesses? So for business owners that are listening, we have a lot of folks that are SMB, maybe a little bit more on the medium size. What are three things that you would recommend that they go ask their financial team? Three things that they should do today before they go to bed.
Yeah, and I'm glad you didn't ask, or I'm glad you asked me about the Ireland stuff for the kind of an interesting little tidbit, because I know that from the past, listening to some of your podcasts, you ask people for interesting stories. I thought I was going to have to share one I didn't really want to, but a time where I ended up finding myself in an after party with the machine.
Oh, wow.
So
Wow.
that's good. We'll save that for another story, another time. But in terms of, let's see. In terms of the top three things for these business owners, I think the biggest thing is what got you here isn't going to get you to the next stage. And so really having an understanding of, not that you need to be a financial or accounting expert, but to stop pretending that it doesn't matter, I think is a one critical piece of advice that I can give. And what I would do is I would first start really thinking about the predictability aspects that we talked about. And so number two would be look to try to build some level of top line forecast around your KPIs. Go back, figure out your marketing channel or traction channels, your marketing different channels that you're bringing in clients, customers with, and ultimately start looking at that data. Where'd they come in? How do they convert? Try to, Google funnels or whatever. And ultimately, from there, look at your sales process. Find out where they're falling out. You got these top of funnel leads coming in and then they're falling out. And look at the data around that and start tracking it and look at the past and try to predict the future and hold your team accountable for it. So that would be the number two. And then number three, just look at your P&L on your variance. What I mean by that is if you can build a forecast and say, here's what we said we were going to do, and this is what we actually did, and have those little takeaways for each line item on the P&L and say, well, what happened here? And just use that as a learning tool. Those are like just so critical. I mean, that's everything that we do for the most part, besides more of the strategic finance stuff. You could do it yourself. But man, if you do those, you would be amazed at the insights that you'll garner.
That's awesome. Well, Tom, how can people reach you?
LinkedIn is a great way. Apparently, there's a trove of cool information there that you found. And then also just our website, Frack Finance. That's frakfinance.com.
Well, that's awesome. Well, thanks for coming on Leaders and Legacies.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.